All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. We've got a really fascinating case to unpack today, one that I think really kind of gets to the heart of, juvenile justice.
Definitely a lot of interesting issues raised by this Iowa Supreme Court case, Stavey Lyle.
Stavey Lyle, yeah. It's not just some, random robbery case. This thing really could, reshape how young offenders are sentenced, at least in Iowa.
Absolutely. Big implications, especially building on that, Miller v. Alabama decision from the U.S. Supreme Court. We're talking like fundamental questions about how to balance punishment with, well, the reality of being a teenager.
Right, exactly. Like, at what point do we say, okay, you're young, your brain's still developing, but also hold them accountable? And this case really forces us to confront that head on. So for our deep dive today, just to give everyone a roadmap, we're working with some pretty interesting material.
Yeah, we've got some excerpts to kind of guide our conversation, a super detailed perplexity analysis case brief, which really breaks it down. And then we're going right to the source, the actual legal brief from State v. Lyle.
Perfect. So let's start, I guess, with the basics. Who is this Andre Lyle Jr. and what landed him in front of the Iowa Supreme Court?
So Lyle was 17 at the time, and he ended up getting convicted of second-degree robbery.
Robbery. Okay. What happened?
It involved stealing marijuana, and from what I understand, it got pretty violent. Not a, small shoplifting situation.
Oh, okay. So not exactly a harmless prank gone wrong, and for that, he got hit with a mandatory minimum, right?
Yeah. Iowa Code, Section 802.12. It's pretty clear-cut. 7 years minimum, meaning he'd have to do at least 70% of a 10-year sentence before even thinking about parole.
Wow. 7 years. And they, hang on, didn't they at least think about trying him as a juvenile?
They did. The district court actually considered transferring Lyle to the juvenile system, but decided against it. Two big things swayed them. One, he had a history of, I guess you could call it, rebellious behavior. And even more seriously, there were some, well, disturbing cell phone videos of him involved in what looked like unprovoked attacks.
Oh, yikes. Okay, so not just a few parking tickets then. That's pretty serious stuff.
Definitely not a good look, especially when you're trying to argue you deserve leniency due to your age.
Right, right. So this appeal to the Iowa Supreme Court, it wasn't coming out of nowhere. They already had some big cases about juvenile sentencing, right?
Exactly. This wasn't the first time Iowa was grappling with this. You had State v. Null and State v. Pearson, both putting limits on life sentences for juveniles. So the groundwork was already laid, legally speaking.
So with that context, what exactly was the question the Iowa Supreme Court had to answer in Lyle's case?
Okay, so this is the core legal issue. Is it cruel and unusual punishment under the Iowa Constitution to give a juvenile a mandatory minimum without even considering their age? You know, the whole kids are different argument.
That is a pretty weighty question. And their answer was,
they went big. They said all mandatory minimums for juveniles gone. Unconstitutional in Iowa.
Wow. Okay. No hesitation there. That's a big deal.
Huge. What this means, practically speaking, is every juvenile offender in Iowa now gets an individualized sentencing hearing. No more just looking at the crime, slapping on a predetermined sentence. Judges have to consider the kid, the circumstances, everything.
So, like, what were they thinking? Why'd they reach this decision?
Well, a lot of it goes back to what the Supreme Court has already said. You know, those cases you mentioned earlier, Roper, Graham, Miller. They all establish this idea of diminished culpability for kids. Like, yeah, they do bad stuff, but their brains aren't fully cooked yet. You know,
yeah.
Impulsive, easily influenced, more likely to turn things around.
Right. I mean, common sense, really. Teenagers aren't adults.
And the Iowa Supreme Court took that difference and applied it to their own state constitution. They basically said these mandatory minimums violate the idea of proportionality and punishment. Like, the punishment has to fit the crime and the offender. And if you ignore the fact that this is a kid, you can end up with a sentence that's just way too harsh.
So yeah, a one-size-fits-all approach just doesn't work when you're dealing with kids who are still developing.
Right. They also looked at the goals of sentencing. Right. Retribution, making the punishment fit the crime, and deterrence, trying to stop people from doing it again. And they argued that with juveniles, those goals don't work the same way with a mandatory minimum.
Yeah.
You're not really getting justice if you punish a kid the same as an adult for the same crime, because their level of responsibility is just different. And deterrence, well, kids think differently, right? They're not always thinking about consequences the same way adults might.
Yeah, they're not exactly known for their long-term planning skills, teenagers.
Exactly. And Chief Justice Caddy, in his opinion, he just sums it up perfectly. Mandatory minimums are too punitive for what we know about juveniles. the Iowa Constitution demands better. It's like they're saying, we know more about how kids work now. We got to do better than this rigid system.
But not everyone on the court agreed, right? There were some dissenting opinions.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Justice Waterman, for example, he thought the majority was overreaching. Like, who are we, the court, to throw out all these mandatory minimums? That's the legislature's job, he said.
Okay, so like a separation of powers argument.
Yeah, basically. He said, no other court has gone this far. And he was worried they were stepping on the legislature's toes, creating law instead of just interpreting it.
And wasn't there another dissent, too?
Justice Zager. He was more concerned about the practical side of things, like individualized hearings for every single juvenile. That's going to clog up the courts. Plus, he pointed out, there's not really any precedent for this kind of blanket ban.
So, kind of a too much, too fast argument?
Yeah, basically. But the majority, they countered that the Iowa Constitution is clear. It demands this level of protection for kids, regardless of what other courts are doing.
So a real clash of philosophies there. Okay, so bottom line, what's the new sentencing system look like for juveniles in Iowa after all this?
Okay, so now judges in Iowa have to consider all these factors when they sentence a kid. Their age, maturity level, their family life, the details of the crime, and really importantly, their chance of turning things around, their rehabilitation potential. It's a much more holistic view looking at the whole kid.
It makes you wonder if this kind of approach might, you know, actually help reduce recidivism in the long run.
Yeah, that's the hope, right?
Yeah.
Focus on rehabilitation, not just punishment. And get this, the Lyle decision, it's retroactive. So kids sentenced under the old mandatory minimums, they can potentially appeal, get their cases looked at again.
Wow, talk about second chances.
Exactly. And this is where it gets really interesting, legally speaking. The Iowa Constitution now provides more protection for juveniles in this area than the U.S. Constitution. So even though federal law might still allow mandatory minimums for kids in some cases, Iowa is saying, nope, not here.
So they're basically setting a higher standard for themselves. That's pretty remarkable. And this whole thing really speaks to a larger trend, doesn't it? Like, we're learning more about how teenagers' brains work, and the justice system is slowly starting to catch up.
Totally. The science is backing up what we kind of already knew. Kids are different. They make bad decisions, but they also have a huge capacity for change. And this decision, it pushes Iowa to really grapple with that, to see young offenders not just as criminals, but as people with potential.
And that, I think, is the big question this case leaves us with. How do we balance holding kids accountable while also recognizing that they're not fully formed adults? Like, is a complete ban on mandatory minimums the best way? Does it go too far? Or is it a necessary step to ensure we're not just throwing away young lives? It's a tough one, no easy answers, but it's something we got to keep talking about.
Absolutely. This case is a perfect example of how state courts can interpret their own constitutions to give people more rights than even the federal Bill of Rights guarantees. It's a reminder that the debate about how to handle juvenile justice is still going strong, and that the answers might not always be simple or comfortable.
Well said. And, you know, it's cases like this that really make you think about the future of our justice system and how we can make it truly fair and effective for everyone, especially those who are still figuring things out, still growing up.
Couldn't agree more. This case is just the beginning of a much bigger conversation, and I think it's a conversation worth having.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for us today on The Deep Dive. As always, thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
See you then.
Bye, everyone.